This is The Crucible. The JRTC Experience. This is where we discuss warfighting skills and lessons learned in a decisive action training environment for large-scale combat operations at JRTC.
Hi, I'm Colonel Matt Hardman, the Commander of Operations Group here at the Joint Readiness Training Center, and thanks for joining us for another episode of The Crucible, the JRTC Experience. And so we're incredibly fortunate today to have two legends, Command Sergeant Major Nash and Command Sergeant Major Donaldson. Would you both please just introduce yourselves?
Sure, sir. Thanks so much for having us. I'm Adam Nash. I'm Kurt Donaldson's friend, retired Command Sergeant Major, from private through Battalion Sergeant Major in the 75th Ranger Regiment. I spent some time with the other regiment, the 3rd Cavalry Regiment down at Fort Hood, now Fort Cavazos, and then my recent assignment, and also the assignment I retired out of, is of the 4th Infantry Division, the largest, most powerful, and best division in the Army.
Sergeant Major.
Hey, I'm Kurt Donaldson. I spent E-239 in the Ranger Regiment. Last job in the regiment was Op Sergeant Major, went to 82nd, that was 2508 CSM, and then back to the regiment, STB CSM, and then finally the RSM retired. We both retired a couple months ago.
In the vein of leader development, you know, what have you learned over the years, that may be advice for others of how we develop particularly our non-commissioned officers, and what advice would you give to Sergeant Majors and First Sergeants out there?
I'll start. You can't have a blanket approach. Every leader is different. Take me for example. As a private, you could yell at me, you could make me do extra repetitions, whatever. You know, water off a duck's back. If you told me, I'm disappointed in you. You let me down. Oh my God, man. I felt horrible.
I tell them that regularly.
Yeah, it's good. Keep them grounded.
Just gotta keep them grounded.
But the opposite, you know, and that's how I reacted. Other people, though, if you tell them, hey, you let me down, they're like, whatever. But hey, you let your buddy down, you know, or whatever. They just react. So you gotta know how each one of them reacts. What motivates everybody? Everybody gets motivated by a different, for different criteria. So you need to figure it out. You can't have a blanket approach to leadership.
Yeah.
Know your soldiers, know your peer group, know your leaders, and how they tick. And I think that's gonna help you break through sometimes. A lot of people don't like to talk about their personal life. And it's uncomfortable saying, hey, I'm your platoon leader. You can talk to me about anything. I don't quite trust you yet, you know? So you got another thing. Hey, what makes this guy or gal tick? How do I earn trust both ways with them so that when there is something going sideways in their life, they'll trust me to tell me so I can either help them out. Maybe they just want somebody to talk to. Maybe they want somebody to figure out their problems. But understanding them, I think, is the first step. Kurt?
So you're talking like an NCO development program?
No, I mean, just in general.
I think we talked with the SFAB folks this morning, had him out back for about an hour, and Adam and I talked to him. But one of the points was you got to build relationships before crisis. You can't wait till someone in your unit is in dire straits or needs help. That service member is not going to come talk to you if you haven't taken the time to build a relationship. And you know, Adam talked about presence versus present, walking through the motor pool and not talking to somebody versus walking through and talking to as many people as you can on the way through. But for professional development wise and COPD wise, I think you have to be deliberate. You have to talk to, at whatever level, if you're at the battalion level, you talk to your battalion commander. And you get time allotted to do time and money, because maybe you want to do some offsite stuff or bring somebody in. Time and money allotted, and then it's a deliberate process. It's not, what are the team leader course? You do the team leader course every day. Your team leaders are in the team leader course every day, I think.
That's a great quote. Leaders are in the team leader course
every day.
CQ is part of leader development.
It is.
Right? 100%.
Yeah, it is. And you're training those guys every day to take your place.
And, you know, in the deliberate part, you know, it's making sure we get these things on the training schedule.
Yep.
Right. So, I mean, obviously.
And funded.
You know, and funded and supported,
yep.
Right? And,
yep.
You know, at the company level, if it's not on the training schedule, we shouldn't be surprised it's not going to happen.
Well, it's not important if it's not, you know.
Yeah. And, so LPDs, NCOPDs, whatever you want to call it, the leader development program. One of my pet peeves is like, oh, yeah, it's on the calendar, but it's always the first thing that gets cut.
It's got to be the other way around.
You know, yeah, it's got to take the forefront. And I hate to use cliches, but leading by example, that goes a long way. You know, if you get a pet peeve, nobody likes the double standard. You know, if I stand in front of you yelling at you to get your hands out of your pockets and I'm over there sneaking them in mine, just because everybody knows a pet peeve of mine is hands.
Yeah, he hates hands in pockets.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I always
it's a little bit old school. It's a little bit old school that's in me. But
you know, it's funny you bring that up, though. I was having a great conversation with a Geronimo lieutenant yesterday about standards. And, you know, just an officer perspective. So my battalion sergeant major when I was a company commander, retired a minute, Big Jim Miller. I loved this guy to death, and he looked and sounded like a professional wrestler. And the boys nicknamed him Deathmatch Jim Miller. You know, but as I listened to him, and I really respected him, you know, I started to reflect on some of the things that we're doing that was making his life harder. And, you know, lieutenants that haircuts right on the edge of the standard, wearing uniform on the edge of the standard, whatever the thing is to the standard, you know, there's a tendency to maybe the immature staff sergeant to like, okay, whatever the lieutenant's doing, 20% sort of worse. And so, you know, on the officer side, I think there's this like, number one, I think you got to go talk to your battalion and sergeant major if you're a lieutenant. If you're a company commander, you should get on the schedule and spend some time with the brigade sergeant major. You're leaving money on the table if you're not getting that mentorship. But once you understand sort of the things that they're trying to drive in the organization on behalf of the commander, you really got to get on board to help with it. And I think too often, you know, our lieutenants, sometimes our company commanders are like, hey, I'm doing what the commander told me to do. But are you supporting the non-commissioned officers in the adherence to standards and discipline? And you kind of got me off on a tangent there. But, you know, that's one of the things I learned as a company commander is I just kind of, frankly, just grew up a little bit.
We grew up, I mean, it was a harsh environment, but it was a good environment. It was competitive and it was tough. I mean, a private in the Ranger Regiment should have a hard life every day, and then should get a little bit better when he or she gets a Ranger tab. But like you have to earn it every day.
Yeah.
Like when you show up to a job, to the Army, to you know whatever. If you think you've made it, like you probably should do something else. Like you should never think you made it.
No, I show up to 2505 brand new captain, and I've got my EIB, my airborne wings, my air assault wings, and report to the battalion XO, and Colonel retired Chris Toner is like, you jump master qualified? No, sir. Okay, you need to fix that, right? Because every single day that's exactly it. We're earning every day.
You gotta earn it every day. But, you know, for instance, like environments and stuff. So from 05 to 07 and 375, 3rd Ridge Battalion, then there were three line companies and it changed and now it's back to three. So nine infantry platoon sergeants in line platoons. Eight of the nine were from the company we grew up in and five of the eight were from the platoon. Third platoon.
Wow.
So, you know, iron sharpens iron.
On the top of that, though, go to 175 from 09 to about 13.
We were all the first
three
sergeants.
Three of the four maneuver first sergeants are from SECO 375.
We all grew up together. We were E3s together.
I just couldn't shake him. He's like a little kid brother.
I just follow him around.
You know?
My back
he's
hurts.
Drafting off you.
I got a bad back from carrying this guy for that many years.
Yeah, whatever. This guy is the biggest blue falcon ever. He gets in trouble with the battalion sergeant major, and all he says is, do you know what Nash is doing right now?
Yeah.
And guy comes over to see what I'm doing. You know, when we talk about leader development, what I've seen in the Army is a lot of our junior leaders aren't making corrections because they either don't know the standard or they don't care. more than likely it's because they don't know the standard. You know, as rapidly as the Army has changed with a bunch of standards, you know, you're yelling at somebody, hey, go fix this stuff, and you're like, well, Sergeant, are you tracking this change?
LRAC. Yeah.
So, for instance, you know, it was no surprise to me when the Army changed that females could wear the hair in a ponytail. Well, that didn't trickle down to every leader. And, you know, there were some people like, hey, you need to put your hair in a butt. Like, so focusing on standards, hey, these are standards, we should know these. And then SOPs, whether they're unit SOPs or whatever, they're important to know too. For the sheer fact that most SOPs in the Army were written in blood or written in, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, something like that. There are an SOP for a reason. And when a lot of our new soldiers want to know why, hey, why can't I put my hands in my pockets? Why do I got to wear this flag? Why do I got to wear this patch? Why is this an SOP? It's important we understand why that SOP became an SOP and letting your Joes know so they don't have to experience the pain to get to that, okay, we need to do it this way.
Yeah, and then we got to live them.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, living the SOPs. I mean, I took over as a company commander. I was really, really fortunate. The company commander I took over from, I mean, the guy that spent, after company command, spent the rest of his career in special mission unit, phenomenal officer, phenomenal person. Really, the unit I stepped into where I'm looking around and, like, take out the tax op and everybody's doing what's actually in the tax op. And a pretty phenomenal experience to get to be a part of it. But then it was like, you know, me, don't put it in the ditch, right? This thing's working, do it right. But we got to have practice at doing it to where we're in an environment where fellow peers are saying, hey, you're doing that wrong. I mean, we can't have a world where it's all the first sergeant and the company commander fixing everything. We got to have an immersive community where, to your point, people understand the why and they've lived it and we're self-correcting. Not because, like, we want to be, like, you know, a haze on everybody, but it's because, like, this is how we do things and we're all going to be right.
I think, you know, it provides junior NCOs an inspection, a means of inspection.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
So if you're just no SOPs or SOPs aren't enforced, part of that young NCO's power base, if you will, is one, know the standard, live the standard, and hold yourself and others accountable. And, you know, we grew up with LCEs, square knot on the mag pouch, end of line, bowl line on the canteen, and have the wrong knot. And I'm not saying we need to go back to that.
Yeah.
That was a hard life. Tie the wrong knot and see. Then you just be timed, like they'd cut it off and you tie it again. Not that, cut it off, but I think, but to this day, sir, I can walk a trained observer. I can walk, I can see kit and be like, weapons on fire.
Right.
Hey, that mag is not, the mag has 31 rounds in.
Because you've been conditioned.
Not to see it.
Yeah.
And if you're not conditioned to see things, it's like Jump Master School.
Right.
You do a bunch of clean rig after clean rig. And then, and only then, do they put
deficiencies,
foamy in the clasp or something. But I think I think SOPs are important for, you know, functionality and staff processes and you know the time aspect, but I think we don't give the thought that junior NCOs, staff sergeant below, benefit immensely from a unit that has SOPs and ruthlessly enforces them.
So I gotta jump. Here's the other part, though. I think the other part is over time, it also provides a vehicle to demonstrate that I care about you.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And
sure.
I think the added benefit back up is like it's repetition of my team leader makes me do my homework and go to bed on time and make sure I eat dinner because he cares about me. Sorry.
They really cared about us in the 90s.
Yeah, they did.
So to emphasize one of Kurt's points and to really highlight the type of leader he is and about a trained observer, you know, we're dressed right dressed for a reason. It's to pick things that are out of place. Whether fortunate or unfortunate, I never fought in Zari Panjwe. Kurt, on the other hand, did. And in order to survive in Zari Panjwe, you had to say, hey, that looks out of place, and it's a freaking tripwire or whatever, you know? And it's because of that's how Kurt was raised, you know? And he'll never say that he saved this many people's lives because he identified stuff, or you just get that feeling. But that's what he's talking about. When you're a trained observer, you see something that's out of place, let's not walk down that path. And for any of the people that fought Zari Pandre, they're like, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, luckily, you know, whether you had EOD or dog on leash or whatnot helping you out, but it was because of intuition of the way he was raised. You know, Kurt was able to pass it on to his NCOs, which at the end of the day, helped protect a lot of his force as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, airborne operations is the same thing. It's just like what you're describing. You walk by and like, whoa, what are we doing?
That's off. That pack is rigged incorrectly.
Right.
Over versus under. But you just see it. If you were raised properly,
yeah,
following it. And I just think, and then the whole GWAT thing, I think we need to reel some of the stuff back. The whole shooter preference.
Yeah,
but the guy's a private. I mean, he doesn't have any preferences. His preferences are the preferences that I tell him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll give you, I'd ask this one. I mean, how many squad live fires do you think you've personally done, Sergeant Major?
As a member of a squad?
And then I'm coming to you with the same question.
Be whatever he says.
Close to 100?
Yeah, probably the same.
Okay, how many have you observed?
Hundreds, thousands,
right?
Yeah, a lot.
So your sample size is just so much higher. You know, I did not really get this as a company commander. By the time I was a battalion commander, I was like, okay, Sergeant Major, you're the guy. Like, I'm there. I have an important role, I think, as a commander. But, I think Sergeant Major, First Sergeant, that's the primary trainer, small unit tactics, because you've done it 100 times. You've seen it 1,000 times. Not just the credibility, but just the sheer expertise of, the small, minute things that make a difference.
That was Mike Hall's point with fighting platoon sergeants. You know, the platoon sergeant is the senior soldier in that element, the platoon. And he should be able, or he or she should be able to maneuver that element better than anybody.
Yeah.
And now, depending where you work, I mean, we expect second lieutenants to lead those platoons, and that's what they're kind of bred to do, depending where they commission or OTC and stuff. But there's a lot of stuff.
Right.
When this was, kind of founded founded, lieutenant up front, et cetera. Well, that lieutenant, 30 years ago, didn't have, three levels of ISR, offset, all this stuff that he or she has to manage. But quite frankly, I don't know, you'd have to be exceptionally bright for instance, a lieutenant in the Ranger Battalion, that person has a lot of stuff to manage. And if his platoon sergeant's not up doing fighting platoon sergeant stuff, it's not gonna go well.
And I love the concept of a fighting platoon sergeant. It's not right for every unit, though. I think that was my big takeaway as I come out to the conventional army, and I'm like, why the hell aren't you maneuvering with your squads? And if there's not a culture of that, and the senior leaders within that organization aren't thrusting that forward, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And it's got to start early.
And you got to have a guy or gal that's competent enough to
do
be
it.
A fighting platoon sergeant.
Yeah.
With the Army, you might make it through 2 years of squad leader time before you go on drill or recruiter duty or something like that. Then you come back from those assignments 2-3 years down the road. Hey, Sergeant First Class Hardman, you're going to be a platoon sergeant. And you're like, man, I just got off the trail. I catch my breath and figure out what I'm doing? We got short memories. So it's going to be dependent on, a Bradley platoon. I could go either way. I might say, hey, I want the platoon sergeant staying with the tracks to support my maneuver. Depending on the quality of that platoon leader, maybe they could switch out. But a leader's got to look at that, their organization, the culture, and then the capabilities of their leader's competencies to see if that's the right thing. So light infantry, I think you could almost say that's a right fit most of the time.
Yeah.
It's a fighting platoon sergeant.
Two kind of thoughts on it. I think one, and this is, kind of a challenge to folks out there, is you got to be worthy of that too. I mean, it's like we need non-commissioned officers that are seeking out opportunities to grow and develop itself.
You can't sit back and watch the lieutenant do all the work. No. I mean, you got
to
be.
They got to go to ranger school. They got to have an EIB. They got to truly be experts in what we do. Yep. And just by being in a platoon for 10 years doesn't necessarily make them
expert.
Yeah,
that doesn't qualify them. They need to have all the requisite stuff ahead of time. But.
You know, the other is, you know, I think it is hugely important for our platoon leaders to seek out the experiences of our command sergeant majors, to get time with them, to understand, to want that feedback. And I think great command sergeant majors do that. They provide feedback in a helpful way to lieutenants. But, you know, I didn't maybe get that as much as I should have as a junior officer. And then I think that's absolutely true, you know, as you continue to go up. You know, the battalion command sergeant major as a company commander, like, it's hugely important to help you understand your formation, how to think about the way you train, and then, you know, at the brigade level, I mean, the ability to have the command sergeant major, you know, helping develop majors and really be a sounding board for reality, I think is hugely important.
Same thing with lieutenants and first sergeants.
Yeah.
I think I was a first sergeant he was a first sergeant forever. He was really good at it.
He got retrained.
Yeah, he did a long time as a first sergeant. But I had a different relationship. I had Pat Work's brother as commander, Jimmy Howell, and then Ed Graham at the tail end there. I had three commanders. But I just had a different relationship with the XO and the lieutenants, the PLs. They'd come in, shut the door, and it was just a different relationship. Maybe it was something that they didn't feel comfortable talking to the commander about. Maybe it was like some life advice or whatever, or hey, this just happened. What do you think? And you're not undercutting the commander by doing that or anything like that.
I think
first sergeants should play an outsized role in mentorship with lieutenants.
I completely agree with that.
So, 2 points then. One, NCOs, you have the obligation to be worthy of this.
Yep.
Right? But, you know, of this mentorship that you're giving to the, you know, these junior officers. Or if you're a battalion sergeant major to company grade officers, or if you're a division sergeant major to the battalion commanders. And then commanders at every level, you owe it to reinforce these points. I was lucky enough in my last assignment, both my division commanders said, hey, battalion commanders, as you onboard, you're gonna go talk to the division sergeant major. And I'd give them some of my points. We'd have a great conversation, you know, and I'd give them my thoughts on battalion leadership and stuff like that, but they wouldn't have. And before they made it mandatory, you might get one out of 29, right? That would actually chase down me and say, "Hey, can I get on your calendar?" Hell yeah, sir! I'll come to you. You know, like that's great. It gives me a reason to get out of the office, come see your footprint, just have a good discussion, because I know. As I was onboarding battalion sergeant majors, I made a point, hey, I'm gonna talk to each one of you. So commanders, you owe it. Hopefully your CSM or your first sergeant's quality guy or gal, make it a point. If you're a company commander, tell your lieutenants, you're gonna go spend some time with the first sergeant.
I couldn't agree more.
I wanna talk about, you mentioned get out of the office. I think it's important to get out of the office. If you don't get out of the office, you can find a million reasons to, hey, I got to check email, or hey, this is due, or hey, all this stuff, or I've got meetings. Like, you got to get out of the office. If you're an NCO, I'm talking kind of company and above, but like, you got to get out to the range. You got to go spot check. You got to be seen.
But every time you go out, your purpose should be spot checking and finding deficiencies.
Yeah, don't go out and be a pain in the ass. Yeah. Clearly, like don't show up and just
don't be a training distractor.
Don't be a distractor. But
I got this great advice before I took battalion command. I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then like living it as a battalion and brigade commander, like that was my leader fuel. I mean, I would go out and I'd see stuff that I wasn't like particularly thrilled about. But I think to your point, like you can't pop the pen, pull, you know.
Life, limb, or eyesight.
Pop the spoon and throw a grenade in the room.
Yeah.
But everybody sort of knows this, but like when you end up in all these meetings and doing the things that we have to do at the senior level, it is just rejuvenating when you end up talking to a PFC. Yeah. I talked to one the other day sort of happenstance. And he's like, oh, it's amazing. I signed in here like 90 days ago. It's awesome. I've got an amazing, my sergeant's amazing. He onboarded me. Like,
those are the best.
I'm like, oh my God, this is the best thing he's ever had.
Hey.
And it's like, well, why are you here? Well, I want to do this. I want to make a better life for myself. I want to make a better life for my family. These are my goals. And we get to be a part. I mean, as you kind of talked about at the beginning, we get to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And I think this, like, you got to get out. Part of this is like, remind us why we're doing all this for the phenomenal
And if something's screwed up, if it's not life, limb, or eyesight, pull the leadership off to the side when you're leaving and just have a conversation. Right. Be like, hey, I identified these things. I need you to fix it, and then leave.
I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. Hey, so speaking of privates, I was filling in for Craig Bishop that was deployed with Brandon Tegmeyer, General Tegmeyer, Brigadier General Tegmeyer now. And I don't remember what GO came by.
Is this going to be a long story?
No, it's going to be quick. Bottom line is, we had a bunch of leaders up and some privates and stuff. There was a pretty good contact, and they're giving them some awards and stuff. And the GO asked this young PFC, "Hey, PFC Smith, like, what do you think?" And I'm just like, because you never know. You never know what you're going to get. It's either going to be really good or really bad. There's like never a... But he was like, "Sir, I did the training cycle, and I came over here, and we got in this gunfight, and I knew exactly what to do." I'm paraphrasing. But it was basically along those lines. I was like, yeah.
That is awesome.
So similarly, the last time we were together, the Force Comm Commander and Sergeant Major came out. It was, I think it was Abrams from Grinston.
It would have been Joel Abrams.
And it was a great, they did a great welcome. You and your crew did a very great welcome. Gassed the entire brigade, the regiment. They were trying to talk to us, but we were all in MOP 4 at the time. I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
but
I'll do some burpees. Sorry, Sergeant Major.
So General Abrams in the regimental talk, and he's talking to some people, and he comes to this one private, and he goes, "Hey, Private, what are you?" He's like, "Well, I'm doing this." He's like, "Well, how long you been in the regiment?" And he's like, "And we're probably on." It was towards the end, so we're like training day 10 or something like that, or training day 9. He goes, "I've been in the regiment for 2 weeks." He goes, "2 weeks?" He goes, "I showed up, I drew my CIF, and I came out here." And he's like, "Wow, that's awesome. Who's the regimental commander?" He goes, "I have no clue." And he goes, "Let me introduce you to Colonel John Byram. It's your regiment." But, the kid was motivated, and you never know. It's like, hey, what's my kid going to do? What's your private going to do when they're putting it?
Right.
They're either going to, be a hero, or they're going to be a zero. But either way, it's still entertaining.
It's definitely entertaining.
All right. Hey, to both of you, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to give you each the last word. Any kind of advice or wisdom you want to give out to leaders out there?
A couple quick points. Don't be a transactional leader. Transactional leaders are just, they're garbage. You gotta know your people, care about your people, give them purpose, direction, motivation. If you're a transactional leader, I think BCAP and CCAP, you're gonna have some significant problems, and then SMAP with the sergeant majors. And I think you gotta show up every day with a level of professional anxiety that you need to earn a spot on your team every day. And two more points: leaders are on parade all day, every day. That's to include social media, your office space, office area. If you're seen on the weekends with how you interact with your spouse, how you interact with your kids, you're on parade 24/7. People are watching every day, all day. And the last thing is back to Mike Hall and Sam and General McChrystal. Sergeant Major Hall and General McChrystal, the big five, that shit matters. And you can have all the tech in the world. You can have, any new gadget you could possibly think of. But if you can't execute the big five, POD anywhere in the world with a moment's notice, I think everyone's got work to do.
Right.
And yesterday doesn't count. You got to earn it every day. Yesterday doesn't count. Adam, that's...
Yeah, I would say invest in your people, right? Nobody gets to the next position all by themselves. you know, as a as an NCO, your NCVR is all the bullets on there, or is what your subordinates have accomplished under your leadership. And that goes for officers as well, you know. So invest in your people. They're going to help you out. You're not always going to be the smartest person in the room. Be humble enough to just sit there and listen for a little bit. And that could be, you know, great example is my last assignment. I learned a crap ton from the battalion commanders that I had the chance to interact with. To steal a quote from one of my Ranger buddies is, as a leader, you're going to fail somebody every day. Just make sure it's not the wrong person, all right? We all try hard, and you need to try hard. And I think being a humble leader and use your position to make the entire organization better, you know, whatever that is, whether it's you're going to focus on standards and discipline, or you're going to focus on being the force of the 21st century, or you're going to increase academics. I don't care what it is. Use your position to improve something around you. And if any doubts, just snap link into some good people and ride their coattails like I did Kurt Donaldson. Hey, I'm Adam Nash. I'm Kurt Donaldson's friend. It's been a pleasure being on the podcast, sir. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you both so much for joining us, and hope to see you back down here in Arnland or South Torbia, whatever we're doing that month. Thanks so much. Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Thank you for joining us on The Crucible, the JRTC experience.
The Joint Readiness Training Center is the premier Crucible training experience. We prepare units to fight and win in the most complex environments against world-class opposing forces. We are America's leadership laboratory. Again, we'd like to thank our guests for participating. This podcast was created and produced by Mr. John Mabes. It was recorded and edited by Chief Thomas Rich and researched by First Lieutenant Anthony Cho. Intro vocals were done by Mr. Robert Chopper. Special thanks to Captain Jermaine Branch and Mr. Jeff England from Public Affairs. Be sure to like and follow us on social media to keep up with the latest warfighting TTPs learned through the crucible that is the Joint Readiness Training Center. Follow us by going to https://linktr.ee/JRTC. We'd like to thank our partners at the Center for Army Lessons Learned of the Combined Arms Center, especially the JRTC Call Observations Detachment. Be sure to follow them on social media as well. Follow them at https://www.army.mil/CALL. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review us wherever you listen or watch your podcasts, and be sure to stay tuned for more in the near future. The Crucible, the JRTC experience, is a product of the Joint Readiness Training Center.